Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the sad reality is things are bad, and they're going to get a lot worse. You look at the unemployment numbers and, you know, the fact that the Republicans took a nice long weekend to do whatever, golf, go out on their yachts, rub elbows and raise money for whatever, find their next job, hopefully. Millions of people fell off the unemployment cliff, and millions of other people are saying, I can't pay my rent, I can't pay my mortgage. The question is, what's this going to look like in 2, 3, 6 months? Here to share some thoughts on maybe what things look like and how bad things really are. I've asked our good friend Pedro DaCosta to come talk with us. He's a senior reporter over at Market News. Pedro, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure. All right, Rick.
So not good. You know, I'll be honest with you. I look at these unemployment numbers, and for people who have jobs, be fortunate for now. But if things continue to spiral, we're all going to be standing on the street corner.
I say thanks for my job every day. That's for sure. And, you know, we were talking about it off air. The number of people that have filed for unemployment claims, the total number of first time unemployment claims since the start of the pandemic is 54 million. Imagine 54 million lives, dreams shattered. And, you know, so the damage, I think one of the things to keep in mind is that from the economist standpoint, from Wall Street standpoint, the second quarter was terrible. We knew that. So the worst is therefore behind us. That's the story they're trying to sell us now. And the real story is, well, that might be true from a sort of macro standpoint in terms of like business pullback, but the initial round, right?
Right.
But we have been in a suspended animation in terms of like forbearance on mortgage payments and eviction moratoria. And now that these and unemployment benefits, to your point, now that these very fragile social safety nets are going away, now I think we might really see some pain. And you know, not that we already haven't, but I think the next quarter might be actually worse.
No, and that's the thing that's scary to me, because, you know, the sad reality is I think Republicans realize that they're probably going to take a beating in November. So I think, and you can agree or disagree, that they've already decided we're going to lose anyway. So we're just going to scorch earth. They're not going to do anything that's going to really help average everyday working people. And when the next president comes in, there's going to be massive pain, massive unemployment, massive home loss. And in fact, the next 2 years, you're going to just be cleaning up the mess that was left behind, and nothing is going to get done to move us forward as a country.
I would say that's not a bad piece of political analysis, in the sense that Republicans appeared very motivated in the first round of stimulus when the crisis first hit, and when the political, the polling and the electoral outlook was still somewhat different. But now that the pandemic response has been so botched, and that botched response has led to such vast, not only human toll and deaths and sickness, but also economic pain, and that pain is clearly caused by the party that mismanaged the crisis at the federal level, I think there is a sense of kind of like, you know, kind of shrugging your shoulders and seeing, you know, and letting it ride, because there's no political, you know, other than already knowing you're losing, there's no political logic for not wanting to help people in a time of need in a year. In an election year, there should be an absolute consensus. You know, every politician should want to do this. This should be politics 101.
No, but even beyond the politics, just being a human being, this should be front and foremost. But, you know, we've seen this before, and
I'm not expecting humanity of our politicians, Rick. I'm, you know,
well, you got a point.
Calculus and logic here.
You have a point. But the thing is, you know, I've got a senator in the state that I live, Pat Toomey, who said in 2009 that he wanted to see a much harder down. He didn't think the federal government should have intervened. Things should have collapsed, smashed into the rocks, and millions of more people should have lost their jobs and their homes and their life savings and their health care and their families and all of that, so that in his view, in his ideological, logical, purist view, then we'd have been reborn and we'd have had this great reawakening. And while millions of people are losing their homes and in the streets suffering, and all of the stuff that we saw in 2008, 9, and 10, even worse, I fear that's what they're going to do this time.
You know, I would say that the ideological purity of Mr. Toomey and others of his political ilk is not that pure, in fact, because they're perfectly willing to bail out, you know, big corporations. They're perfectly willing to cut taxes for the rich when it's convenient. So it's actually a very calculated ideological play that I think is very cynical. And it's cynical in the sense that, like, oh, if, you know, we if only we, and there is some element of philosophy to it. If only you let things crash, then, you know, something greater will come out of it. But this sort of liquidationist philosophy, it might work in sort of like, sure, we should liquidate a cruise sector that is no longer useful to society. Now, that is something I can get behind. But to liquidate entire sectors of the economy, you know, on an ad infinitum basis, you're just going to generate a depression on top of a depression.
Yeah. And, you know, the people who benefit are the people like Trump, who are going to come in and buy up everything for pennies and then exploit the poor people who lost everything to begin with. You know, we saw this in 2009 and in 2010, you know, when millions of people were losing their homes. And I remember having these folks on the program, you know, talking about, you know, I've worked my whole life for this little piece of the American dream. I bought this little house and now I'm losing it and they're throwing all my stuff out onto the street. I have nowhere to go. Or there are no jobs. And, you know, this kind of misery, I don't want to see for anyone. But, you know, I'll tell you, you look around, it's coming.
You know, the CNBC had a great story that I tweeted, got a lot of traction today because it was 40 million Americans, 40 million renters face risk of eviction over the next couple months. That is just a drastic number of people who could be on the street. And I was smiling a little bit as you talked about housing, and I didn't mean to seem callous. The reason I was smiling is when you talked about the last crisis, I have this memory of Donald Trump that nobody, few people share, because it was like a 3 a.m. infomercial that I watched, you know, in my late 20s, early 30s in New York in 2006. And he had this infomercial late at night about how to make money in real estate in 2006, right?
Yep.
So he was in on that one very, you know, big time. And, but of course, you know, back then it was just, he was just a business guy and his actions had a much narrower effect on society. So now we're in a different place.
But here's the thing. And the reason that I asked you to come and talk to us about this is you have a different experience than I think most Americans have. I mean, you've seen what potentially could happen here with mass homelessness and desperation and poverty from your home country. That you had said something to me, you know, off air that, you know, we're kind of, you know, heading towards where Detroit was in the 80s and maybe where your country of Brazil was, you know, back at that same period.
That's right. And so I kind of witness it in Washington, D.C. That kind of, and by the way, it's a long term trend, right? When I used to warn my Reuters colleagues about inequality back in the early 2000s, and they would brand me a young lefty liberal, I would say, look, it's not really a liberal point. I grew up in a country that's so unequal that even if you're very rich, your life is really uncomfortable because you're under threat at all times, right? So even if you have it really good, you kind of have it crappy. So you don't want that world, believe me. And so, and then we had the financial crisis and inequality became a sort of thematic issue, but we didn't know that it was going to get as stratospheric as it might get during a pandemic. A pandemic has a way of accelerating all these social trends. And so, yeah, I'm already seeing things in the street when I drive around DC, which I do just to kind of reconnoiter and to see how things are changing, which stores are shuttered, which ones might come back. And you start to see levels of homelessness and encampments that are very reminiscent. I mean, DC homelessness was already chronic anyway, but you're starting to see levels of destitution and poverty right in the street that, you know, you certainly should not be seeing in the capital of the world's richest country.
Yeah, especially now, you know. But I saw a report that, you know, said that, you know, how many millions of small businesses have just folded up shop. And like you, I drive around and, you know, you look at now empty storefronts that used to employ people and you start going, you know, does this stuff come back on its own or do you need government intervention to help? And look, I'm a believer in we use our government to do the things collectively we can't do individually. And saving small business, saving, you know, people from homelessness, those are things we do collectively through our government. But again, sadly, we've got a leadership in the Senate that has no appetite whatsoever to do any of those things.
Yeah, the lack of action is pretty appalling, especially I think what gets me the most is having covered the last crisis is the fact that, and this is a bipartisan critique, the fact that we can go through something as traumatic as we did in 2008 and 2009 and not develop some kind of fiscal plan that, like, and I don't care if it's a conservative one or a liberal one or whether the elements are more sort of tax cut based or spending based, but just some kind of automatic plan, an automatic stabilizer, like, if X, then Y. Like, if the economy does this, then we're going to create these jobs. You know, the whole concept of stimulus, the notion that people, if instead of thinking that maybe Congress is going to pass a stimulus in 3 weeks and you might get a check in a month and a half, if you knew that once the economy hits a certain wall, that $1,200 is going to be in your account the next day, you wouldn't even, your spending wouldn't even skip a beat because you'd already, and that's what's happening in Europe. And Europe is showing itself to have, you know, for all its faults and for all its problems, a fairly resilient social model because guess what? A social safety net and universal health care help during a pandemic.
Yeah, but you're a socialist then. If you're advocating for free money and free health care, socialist.
You know, that is the American labeling system that is so damaging to our political discourse, right? Because obviously, you know, South Korea is not a socialist country and their healthcare is not totally government run. I mean, it's not like it doesn't have to be, but it is universal, right? Everybody's got it. There's nobody who can't get tested for COVID who wants to. And so, you know, the whole socialism label is just getting so tired.
Now, it's crazy. But the question then becomes, when do we as a country wake up to fighting against those dog whistles and fighting against those labels and saying, look, you know, we do need those automatic stabilizers. We do need a program to make sure that people don't lose their homes, because mass homelessness, mass evictions is not just bad for the people losing their homes. It's bad for communities because you end up, and we learn this in places like Cleveland and Milwaukee and Detroit, that when those houses are abandoned, bad things happen. And they never come back. Those neighborhoods never come back.
You know what, though, Rick? I think that's where kind of racist politics plays a role in the politics of division, because a lot of times what the right wing in the United States will do is to make white poor Americans feel like their plight is somehow separate from that of poor Hispanics or poor Blacks or poor Native Americans. And therefore, that any help that we provide to the economy is going to go to those people rather than to us.
Homeless is still homeless, Pedro. Broke is still broke. If you can't pay your rent or your light bill or put food on the table for the kids, it doesn't matter if you're white, Black, Hispanic, doesn't matter at all to me.
That's exactly my point. But, you know, but if you believe that the money's going to somebody else, if you think of yourself as not being part of that poor class because you've been, you know, brainwashed to believe otherwise, then it's hard to get you out of it.
Is there any hope then? I mean, because look, these racist tropes have been around, you know, from the beginning of the country.
There's ample hope. Look at young people. I mean, young people approach the anti-racism fight with a whole nother level of finesse and intelligence than our old fogies, you know, behinds could handle. Like, you listen to some of these young teenage protesters in the streets, and they will give you a 1 hour lecture on, like, the nature of institutional racism, the, you know, the way to do reparations. So there's plenty of hope, and there's plenty of hope in American politics. We are living through a dark period. It was already a dark political period. Now it's compounded by a public health crisis that has gotten completely out of control. And so it's dangerous.
So let me ask you a last line of questioning, because, you know, this is one of those moments where, you know, people should be calling their senators early, often. The House has done their job. We can argue whether the HEROES Act is enough. We can argue if it was targeted in the right places. The reality is you're talking about a $3+ trillion piece of legislation to add demand into the economy to keep the wheels flowing. They've done their job. The Senate hasn't. Thoughts, direction, marching orders?
Well, I wish I had a senator call, being a Washington, D.C. resident, so That's my plug for Washington statehood.
You can call mine. Call Pat Toomey early and often.
Puerto Rico as well. But to your point, I mean, I don't really have marching orders. I think the Senate's going to do what it's going to do. I mean, I think all they want to do is just reduce the number because, as you said, they want an economy that's wobbly into the election now that they think they're going to lose. And so they just want to get that number down, but they will come to a deal eventually. So yeah. I think it's more of a question of attrition rather than anything else. But I think the hope, you know, to be really hopeful, you have to kind of look a little longer term than like 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, I'm with you. But, you know, the thing that gets me, and this is the frustrating part, they're basically just trying to starve people out, which is, you know, which has been their MO. I mean, this is make people more desperate so that they'll be grateful for the crumbs that they give. And it's angering and it's frustrating. And I hope we this November say enough is enough.
You know, I have to say that, again, it's amazing that we can watch the country just veer into a depression. I want to give your viewers some quick context before I go. So we talk about, are we going to be in a depression? We are already in a depression. Like, it took 2 years for unemployment to hit these kinds of levels in the Great Depression. This happened more quickly than any downturn that we've ever seen. And the notion that we can just reverse it and reopen those businesses and la-di-da, we're all going to go back to normal tomorrow is totally ludicrous. So this is going to be a really painful period, but one which, like all crises, creates opportunities for remaking the economy in the way that we want it to look.
Yeah, and that's where I think vision and political courage have to come into play, because you're right. There's going to be a recovery. We're going to move forward. It's just a matter of what that looks like. Pedro, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. As always, great stuff, man.
My pleasure, Rick. Thank you.
Our good friend Pedro da Costa. Make sure you check out his work over at Market News. He's a senior reporter there. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.